to Nick, but I want to say it at the same time.
Live from New York.
No, I don't want to say that. Okay. I want to say it at the same time. Welcome to Ninja Consultant
Show
32.
This is what we're going to talk about in this show. We're going to talk about things you should not forget to bring to Otakon, because a lot of our listeners and fellow podcasters are going to Otakon this year. Otakon, once again, being otaku plus convention. What are you looking at?
I have a Ninja Consultant update. There is a tiny spider crawling across my finger.
Don't let it bite you.
It's really small.
Wow, it is really small.
I think...
It's too bad we don't have a vidcast.
Yeah, it's too bad.
But I'm just saying, don't let it bite you.
This guy is now our official mascot.
A tiny spider. Okay, so anyway, because a lot of our listeners and so forth are going... And I think there was an email I was going to read that we could respond to. One of the crazier ones that we got this week.
Right. I'm going to speak on the topic of the shonen lie.
Oh, I think we're going to have the Allison's My Life in Fandom from Anime Boston that didn't get recorded right the first time.
Oh, okay.
And maybe Why Haven't You Seen This Yet, Porco Rosso.
And possibly a new segment called That's Japan!
Oh, if Chris gets it done in time. Things that you should bring to Otakon. Once several years ago, or actually last year, people were talking back and forth on a mailing list survey I was on about what kind of things should you remember to bring to Otakon. Now, this is a very usual topic of discussion for the Otakon forums and mailing list, and people are always like, bring a lot of cash, because not everywhere takes credit cards, and the ATMs in the area all run out of money, and don't depend on eating at the Burger King across the street, because you have to wait in line an hour, and it's really true. And pretty soon they run out of fries. Although I heard last year they brought extra food just for the con. So you can't depend... Anyway, everyone always says bring food. I'm serious, bring food. Dried food, MREs?
Anything. Meals rejected by everyone?
Yes. Anything you can store without a refrigerator, because there will be no fridge in your con.
Yeah.
A cup of noodles doesn't even work, because it's really hard to heat water to boiling.
Unless it's in your suite, but if it's in your suite, then...
If you have a suite,
you're doing better than we are, frankly. Yeah.
So... Maybe you could bring a USB coffee warmer. No, it's probably not enough.
No, it's probably not a good idea. Because you know you're going to leave that thing on and burn down the hotel.
But yes, you know, plenty of money if you're a cosplayer. Double-sided tape is great for costume emergencies.
Wheat thins. Oh, we moved on to...
Oh, no, it's okay. You can go ahead. Wheat thins.
Wheat thins. I don't know. That saved my life.
Wheat thins?
Sure.
You want to bring, portable
rice
snacks.
Rice cakes.
Bring a bottle of water. You need it. You're going to have to refill it.
Yeah.
And you can refill it near the bathrooms in the convention center or in the back of any of the video rooms. They usually have a cooler full of water that's very well stocked.
Because a hydrated otaku is a living otaku.
And it's really, really hot in Baltimore, and you're walking around a lot, not just in the sun, but in the crowded convention center. You're going to need more water than you think.
It's true.
I heard that Adan in Singapore... He got sick from the heat.
All right, so we have this friend who also listens to the show on occasion.
His girlfriend's from Singapore, and they went to Singapore, and she was like, it's really hot here. You're going to have to drink more water than you normally would. And he's like, Yeah, whatever.
He's not really known for his pragmatic viewpoints, necessarily.
So he ended up getting sick from the heat. And the next time he went on a subsequent journey to Singapore...
Like a year and a half later...
What did he do? She's like, remember what happened last time? You gotta drink more water.
He's like, yeah.
I got it. Got sick from heat again.
No. Heat exhaustion.
All right.
Don't be like him.
One tip.
It may save your con.
One tip came from this guy, Ralph, who's from Metro Anime Society, who wrote a very memorable list of things that you should bring to Otakon. All of them are based on anecdotes, and if he wasn't going to Australia next week, he would have read them out loud himself. Maybe he can still tell some of the stories behind them later. So... Here's his email, read with permission. Here are some tidbits of wisdom from a decade of convention-going experience. Number one, fear the huggles, though glomping seems mercifully to be dying out. Number two, while cramming 12-plus people into a hotel room registered for four, do not yell, "Everybody hide!" at the top of your lungs when maid service comes to your door. Number three, yes to hygiene, no to hogging shared bathroom space. Number four, if someone else is driving you there, never give a massage to your driver unless the driver is extremely well-rested. No, not even then. Five, conversely, never scream, "We're all going to die!" when someone else is driving either. Six, if people you know invite you to share their food with them in their hotel room, never invite anybody else to come along unless you specifically clear it with the host first.
Wow, that's...
It's really good.
That's
advice.
Good advice.
I know. Number seven, never
ever. Wait, can I do 6.5, which is this?
Seven leads into six, but go ahead.
Okay. So there's always the problem of ordering pizza for you and all of your friends in the suite, because no one ever wants to, you know, definitively say anything because they're afraid that other people won't want it. And so there is this tendency to for some people to say, look, I don't care, just get whatever, and I'll eat it. Don't
Why?
Say that.
Usodesho.
Because if you say it, you're going to end up with the pineapple ham.
The goat cheese pineapple.
The goat cheese pineapple ham sardine, which if you like that,
I think leave
then
the
you're
ham
a winner.
Ham is something someone might potentially enjoy. So I think you should say the... Unless you're going kosher.
I'm just saying at Lunacon...
Yeah, I know.
Right.
What was the Penny Arcade comic with the goat anus pizza?
Yeah, we'll link to that.
Goat anus seriously, pizza. Just if you're ordering pizza for large group, that. Stick with plain cheese. Just you can't really upset anyone
because...
except for that vegan.
God.
Vegan. Number six, as we remember, was never invite anyone else unless you clear with the host. Number seven, never, ever bitch about the quality or the nature of the food you're not actually paying for. It's good life advice.
Yeah.
Number eight, never mock someone for bringing multi-outlet electrical power strips. Chances are you will want to plug something into it later. If you bring one yourself, expect to be mocked anyway. Number nine, we'll come back to it. Number All nine, right. Do not bunk with insane Russian chogi masters, even if it seems like a good idea at the time.
I knew a guy who did that. Nice. It didn't go well for him.
No. Number 10. It's generally a good idea to have some food on hand in your hotel room before midnight on the first night of the con. And if you end up calling a friend who wasn't planning to come until the next day, in the dead of the night, with instructions to come right away and bring enough food to feed more than 10 people, be very, very grateful to that person if he comes through for you. Number 11. Make sure all hotel roommates understand that the cost of long-distance calls from the hotel room phones are added to the phone room bill, and that each person will damned well be obligated to pay for their own calls.
Because if you make a call from the hotel phone, you have just cost the earth.
Yeah, I think we...
Nothing is more expensive than making a phone call from a hotel room.
Nowadays, people have a lot of cell phones.
Right,
and usually,
so it's not a big
usually
problem.
Get free long distance, so just use someone else's cell phone. At least they won't probably get charged for it or ask for someone with free long distance.
Or if they do...
Don't use the hotel
it's
phone.
Not going to be $47.
It's not going to cost as much as the hotel.
Which is how much it cost me at Oticon to call Aaron...
From a payphone. That was in the hotel.
That's not a lie.
It turns out it's really hard to connect from a payphone to a cell phone in Baltimore.
And that's why I had to get a cell phone.
And that's why Noah has a cell phone today.
2 years later.
You had one and then you lost it.
3 years later.
You had to get
that was before.
All right.
We went.
Number 12. If you feel like chartering a bus but don't want to pay for it all by yourself, and he means chartering a bus from New York to Baltimore, shoot yourself in the head immediately.
Do it.
If you are still alive and having such thoughts afterwards, repeat. Which, I don't know, the guy who's charted it last year charted it again this year, so maybe he didn't learn his lesson.
He's a masochist.
It's true. 13. If you owe money to Peggy T for anything, pay it promptly and courteously unless you really, really want to die. I've met her. That's true.
Yeah.
She organized, like, massive groups of people from New York to go to Oticon when you used to get a group discount rate. And she organized, like, hotel room shares with, like, 20 or more people, like not in one room, but across multiple rooms and a roommate finding service, and it was nuts. It was pretty cool though.
And basically, if you are staying with me and I have to hunt you down for your share of the hotel room, I will kick you in the brain when I find you.
Fortunately, I'm in charge of that and not Noah. So I don't kick people in the brain, but I do hunt them down. Number 14. If you must puke in someone else's hotel room, don't stomp on his foot afterwards. It's just tacky. Number 15. It's generally a bad idea to share a hotel room with other people when you watched your father die 2 weeks before and someone you've fallen in love with has recently told you that she can't stand you. It's particularly a bad idea if the unrequited loved one is, in fact, one of your roommates.
Ted drama.
Yeah, it's a problem with young romance. I know one listener knows from personal experience that if you broke up with your boyfriend only 3 weeks before the con and he planned to go to the con with you and you still have to share a bed with him, it can be really awkward.
Awkward.
Actually, both of those people listen to our show, so let's move on.
Sorry.
Oh, right. So, do you want to cover our listener feedback first or something else?
listener feedback. I thought you were going to go back to the power strip so I could
talk about
Michael Chen.
Don't Michael use his last
Chen.
Name.
What?
Don't use his last name.
How many Michael Chens are there in the world?
I'm not sure.
Well, I'm using it because he is my arch nemesis.
He's
wherever I am, so too is Michael Chen.
No, more so with me. He actually arrives at places I'm about to be seconds before I get there.
He is my anti-doppelganger.
I don't know if he listens.
He looks nothing like me.
He's like my reverse stalker.
And yet, he knows where I am going and is there first.
It's true. Okay.
Seriously,
so
he's
about
a cool
the
guy, though.
Okay, so the power strip suggestion apparently came from Michael Chen originally. And out of all the things on the list, most things kind of common sense, you know, don't scream about death to the driver and don't, you know, stomp on someone's foot who you puked on.
Be surprised how many common sense things are not frequently followed.
It's true, but the power strip thing, I was like, that's brilliant. And so I started bringing a power strip to every con after that. And oh my God, it's so useful. Like, your friends want to plug in, even if it's only two people, you've got your cell phones, your iPods, your laptop
PS2s.
Plugs. PS2s. Yeah, whatever. Your little portable gaming nonsense.
Almost.
So it's really useful for everyone to charge their stuff. And for the love of God, you want everyone's cell phone charged the next day. Even
yes.
if you can't get cell phone reception inside the convention center very well, at least you want your phone charged. So when there is a signal, by God, you can get it.
Yep. He asks, in the context of a larger
email Nana icons when I checked.
Oh, that was pretty
badass.
Cool.
Anyway, about the Escaflowne episode, though I like Escaflowne, only the original TV series, though, the movie is doinky. I agree with Noah that Merle is an annoying doink.
Aha!
Her seiyuu was awful, and I hate how she shouted, Vansama! All the doinking time. It was so very annoying. As for the noses, doinkies got used to them after a couple episodes. They never really bothered me. Though the TV series has its fault, let it be glad that it didn't turn out like either of the manga adaptations, which were based on unused concepts for the anime. I'm especially glad that it didn't turn out like Katsu Aki Shonen manga adaptation, which is available in the US. Why, Tokyo Pop, why? In this manga, Hitomi is much more buxom. She wears glasses, and she has to strip naked to power the Escaflowne. Yes, strip naked. Shudders. That manga was so doinky. Anyway, keep up the good work and stay doinky, Doink-chan. It's pretty awesome.
I don't get it.
Anime World Order gets like really intelligent people like writing really long. Anyway,
no, I think this is appropriate.
Doink-chan had a lot of useful information in that email, and she's correct that there are two manga adaptations. I've only read a sample of one of the two adaptations, and I don't think it was the shonen one, but maybe it was.
All I can say is that Doink-chan should beware of the Hoobas, the Zubas, and the Sloobas.
Oh yeah, Noah talks nonsense all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're one to point fingers.
Who's pointing fingers? I'm just saying.
Oops.
The Sloo is doing very well today.
Oh man, so crazy. All right, so... So on our last episode, I guess the old business segment.
Oh yes, old business.
Old business.
We like to call this corrections and amplifications.
That's retarded.
That's what the Wall Street Journal, that's what they say.
Meghead. New York Times.
New York Times. You think you're better than us?
Us?
US? USA?
All right, as I learned...
No way.
As I learned from various people's live journal comments and several emails, including from Ichigo and...
Basically, every other podcast.
Gerald.
Every podcast knows more than we do.
Two of them, yes.
The rest, they're a little slow. But we'll get it. Same thing from
So what it was is that, many years ago, ADV did release a Battle Angel Alita DVD, and there were two different pressings of it. Now, it is out of print now. Gerald speculates because James Cameron has bought up all the rights. But, in any case... The only DVDs that are still available are used on Amazon, and they cost $60. On the other hand, I found a perfectly good torrent file, which I think you can buy the dub for $1 and also download a DVD-quality rip. It's not available because, you know, James Cameron's making it not available, but I'm sure some super nice edition will eventually come out.
Yeah.
But in the meantime...
And if it doesn't, James Cameron, I'll see you in court.
But in the meantime, part of being an anime fan is finding the hardest thing you can possibly find to watch and watching it.
That's true.
The most obscure possible thing. If some anime is too easy to find, it only takes like 20 minutes to download, that you're not looking hard enough.
And
you have
really,
to find something and watch it
raw. We've lost that. We've lost that with the internet. We no longer have the joy of the hunt. Because it took me a really long time to track down the Daikon animation.
Oh, yeah.
And once I got it,
now it's
I was the happiest and most popular.
Now you can just find it on YouTube. It's
now it's
kind of sad. They do purges,
Daikon 4.
You can't save it from
anime.
YouTube.
Yeah, you can.
No,
I bet.
You can't download YouTube fast.
What if you have the
Well, if you're a lead hacker anyway, then hopefully you can
find it. I am.
Anyway.
I'm not really.
What was the other thing? You had stuff. Do you want to talk about your stuff before we do fandom and why aren't you watching this?
Yes. I'm going to talk about the myth of shonenism.
5 minutes, go.
Otherwise known as the shonen lie. What you see is in every shonen series, essentially the same formula is set up, where you have a protagonist who is destined to be the best at any one thing.
He usually has a hidden talent.
He has a hidden talent.
And someone else sees it, and they're like, oh my god, he'll be the best blank ever.
Right. Frequently his parent.
His dad, who is either deceased or unavailable, or his grandfather was the best blank there ever was.
Right.
It's like a shonen Mad Lib.
Or her mom, in the case of Battle Athletes.
Oh, yeah. The universal champion of blank.
They all have this family tree, this genetic...
They have a lineage, but it's not... The parent or whatever figure isn't standing there holding their hands, helping them out to glory, and they're out of the picture. So
Right. Whoever
it is has to make it to the top without the help of their deceased parent, in the case of Naruto.
Based on a lot of hard work, and it clearly takes a lot of hard work.
Right.
But here's the part that's a lie. Because in shonen anime...
Oh, in shonen, the goal is always, I must become stronger.
Right.
Whether it's, you know, Hikaru no Go, to Bleach, to anything. I must become stronger.
And there's nothing wrong with that necessarily. However, the lesson that one comes away with is that the greatest thing in life is to be at the top of your game, fighting your rival, who is at the top of his game. Hikaru no Go, the entire series, is about Hikaru himself becoming competition for Toya Akira.
Yeah, or if you're watching Naruto, it's Sasuke and Naruto.
It's,
and Naruto must become competition for Sasuke, who's the best in the class at the beginning. But they eventually become rivals, because
right.
Naruto has to come up to speed.
Then you have all of these other people. You have the people who usually get injured in the series, who are forced to sit out from the final race, who, like Rock Lee, get their asses kicked, and they're sidelined.
Uh-huh.
And rather than cursing their fate, what they do is they say, but still, I can watch these two giants at the top of their game.
The girl in,
fight each other.
One girl in Battle Athletes is like really bummed.
She's bummed, but what does she do? She comes out and watches her.
Yeah.
Watches, what's her name? Ikari?
Yeah. Ikari.
After, and her friend, because her friend first, when Ikari quits, her friend is all over saying, you have a name to live up to,
Yeah. And
I know you can do it if you just apply yourself.
Yeah.
And then when Ikari comes back and turns out to be the better athlete, her friend starts to be really competitive and then breaks her ankle and is
really
out of the race. And
oh, she tries to stay in the race.
Yeah, she tries to stay in. She probably shouldn't have because, frankly,
sick. Some
people just aren't destined to make it. But wait, you can still watch these two titans at the top of their game
battle it out.
And it strikes me that it's not... I don't think it's a good lesson. I don't think that that's true. I don't think...
One thing they pointed out in an episode of AWO once was that in a lot of the sports anime genre, and this... spoilers. So in a lot of sports anime, when it gets to the very last team, when it gets to the very last event, the big tournament, the star doesn't even usually win. Like, they'll come in second or something like that. And because the point of it was the journey along the way. Or even at, like, the end of Hikaru no Go, it's not really clear, and then you find out.
But it's not clear. It's not clear because
but no,
what
it's
is best.
Pretty, they mention it then later.
It's not important to win. It's right. important to be at the top of your game and competing.
Yeah.
Because not only is that what's best in life, if you can't do that, uh-huh. then what's best in life is to watch it. And this is what is known.
So you can live it out symbolically through someone else.
In like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, which I won't discuss here because it's too long, but I'll put something up in the show notes about it. Is at the highest level, uh-huh. you reach a level of, I think it's called peak experience, where it's the closest to enlightenment that you can become.
Right.
It is doing what you do best in ideal circumstances after years and years and years of effort.
What about like the hero's journey? Doesn't the protagonist is the hero of the story, you don't have to do it yourself. You identify with the person who's sidelined. They complete the journey for you symbolically, and you can learn from the hero's lesson. You don't need to go on the quest because the hero does that.
Aaron, you're talking about you, the reader.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, Aaron's talking about Joseph Campbell's hero's journey, which
right.
will also, it's a very long topic, and we'll put something about it in the show notes. I hadn't thought of that, and it's certainly true, but there is something to me that is not life-affirming about that lesson. That what is best in life can't be the love you experience for your wife.
The love you take is equal to the love you make.
It can't be the rearing of children, unless you are rearing them in such a way as they can be the best and go on to become a giant.
If you're Tiger Woods' dad, basically.
If you're Tiger Woods' dad, and I think his story in many ways is that of a Shonen hero, although I don't know that much about golf. I don't know if he really had a rival.
I heard
that
there's
he had
a really sweet golf manga that's by someone crazy like Kazuki Koike.
Really?
Yeah, that they haven't imported. For obvious golf reasons.
Yes, because
but if Mario,
all those hardcore golfers.
But
hey,
if Mario Golf,
Mario Golf
well
seems
here.
To do pretty well.
But come on, you want to read Golf Manga by the author of Crying Freeman?
I do.
So do I.
But not because I like golf.
Yeah, I really don't like
and
golf.
And not because I like Crying
but
Freeman
I like the
all that much.
But I like the sports manga genre. So I would watch that.
My point is, I don't believe in the natural. And I think that it's really important not to convey the message to the audience, especially impressionable young men, that out there is someone who is the best. He is transcendently good, and he has this journey which is teleological, in that he gets better and better, and sure, he has some setbacks, but he's always learning from his mistakes.
I vaguely remember
until he becomes a giant.
I vaguely remember what teleologically means from Philosophy 101,
right.
But can you refresh my memory on this?
Oh, sure.
It's like ontological, teleological,
well,
and
not.
That's the context I memorized today,
okay.
So you're going to have to give me your definition.
So teleology is something moving towards an ideal,
right.
Or a truth. So you have, there is the Platonic ideal of a chair,
yeah.
Which is usually the example that's cited in
okay.
epistemology. So you have the perfect chair, which is the idea of a chair. We know what a chair is, but an actual manufactured chair
right.
doesn't really approach that ideal.
Right.
The perfect chair is the teleological idea, and a craftsman works his entire life to come
towards
ever
that.
Closer to the perfect chair.
Okay. So these people, someone said something really interesting on, I have only listened to one episode and I already learned something from the Planet Japan podcast, that a lot of Japanese athletes, that are, like, high school baseball is so big there that they show it on TV, but some of these kids, like, burn themselves out. They get pitcher arm before
yeah.
they ever reach the majors because they practice every day, and it's so important to them, and they're doing the real thing. They're going out there and training so hard, like Rock Lee, until they've horribly injured themselves, and they never make it to the big leagues because they burn themselves out.
Wow, like me. Take it from me. I'm a burnout. I should know.
Not athletically.
Not athletically.
I don't think you've reached your athletic
ways.
Potential yet.
In other ways. I think that I reached my athletic potential
long
at
ago.
The age of like 3 or 4, I'm afraid.
I think a lot of the message that comes through in shonen anime and sports anime is one that's inherently that inherently clashes with the American ideal of sports, where what I learned playing sports in high school, or what I certainly hoped to believe the whole time, was that, yes, there are people who are naturally good at whatever sport it is, but if you work hard, you can still beat them. If they,
right.
If they don't develop their talent, if they're not serious about it, they'll never reach the same heights you can attain by training hard yourself. Also, there's not, in American culture, I don't think there's as much of a thing about, like, there's not such a great dependence on lineage. We don't worship our ancestors here because we don't have that kind of Eastern culture thing going on.
Also because our ancestors are kind of jerks.
Our ancestors are jerks, and we don't want to look back too far into our dark past.
But you don't have to look farther than one generation to find... anyway.
Yeah, but I think a lot of people, like, they don't, you know, it's like just because your mother wasn't a famous Olympic speed skater, it doesn't mean that you can't be. Like, you could just come out of nowhere and take an interest in speed skating and be an awesome Olympic speed skater. It takes only your will and not your lineage. We're very against, what is it, where you inherit the crown and stuff? Monarchy.
Oh, monarchy, sure.
Monarchistic type of thing. Inherited stuff is not as important. They have those extra inheritance taxes.
Meanwhile, Japan still has an emperor, kind of.
Kind of, right. But, you know, they have that fascination with, like, a royal family type thing that we just don't have here and actively work against.
Right.
Like, inheriting wealth in the clergy. I have an aunt who's a nun. Well, she's my great aunt. But she pointed out that one reason that there are no women priests in the Catholic Church traditionally, and why people aren't allowed to have kids who are priests, it's inheritance of wealth.
Mm.
The Catholic Church didn't want wealth to be inherited from down a lineage from one generation to the next.
So what we can... perhaps divine from this culturally is if you are training your child to be the best, It's not just that you have some kind of filial pride, that you have earned the crown yourself, you are Baki's dad, and you're crazy powerful, and you want to raise your son to be crazy powerful too.
But he's not. He steps out of the picture. Because anyone who's riding off their father's fame in anime is a kiss-ass.
That's right. You don't want to be that guy.
You don't want to be that guy. And that guy shows up in planets, whatever you want to call it, where he's like a rich kid, and he's getting into space, and he could have his own spaceship, like, any day of the week. And he totally just gets made fun of and mocked, and they bring him way down. Even though Hachimaki?
Mm-hmm.
Hachimaki's dad is also an astronaut. Hachimaki's earning his own way. He's, you know, raising money for his own spaceship.
But at the same time, Hachimaki's dad is an astronaut.
And he's one of the best.
And he's one of the
best.
As
it turns out.
And Hachimaki has to work very hard to overcome problems. And Planetus is, I think, unique. Not wholly unique, but largely unique in that Hachimaki, he has to gain physical strength, but he has an incredible emotional battle that he has to fight out, that is far more intense than the physical one.
Yeah.
And it's true, Planetus is not really, it's not shown in anime.
No, but at the same time, it still has that formula of the absentee father who is the best at something, and the son who must work hard on his own two feet to reach that level.
Which is very interesting, given the way that series ends, which I won't reveal, because that's a spoiler too awesome.
Oh, crap.
Go out and watch Planetus immediately.
Planetus has a stopwatch in it with a message scratched on the inside, and I've realized lately, now I've seen it happen three times. In Full Metal Alchemist, there's a stopwatch with something scratched on the inside, and in the...
Yeah, super, always hardcore.
Yeah, that's not what's scratched on it, except for in the video.
Right.
In the super awesome manga that I just read, Sexy Voice and Robo, towards the end, as the manga gets better and better, all of a sudden, in, like, one of the last chapters, there's a pocket watch with something scratched on it. I'm like, wow, that's what you do. That's... how you know it's super good anime or manga. You got a pocket watch with something scratched on the inside. It's a dead giveaway.
Yep.
All right. Awesome. So that's the
Am I done? Yeah. Am I done? Maybe not quite. What I'm trying to say, ultimately, is that life is not teleological, nor should one get the impression that the shonen myth actually applies to you. Because you sit down, and they're supposed to be very inspirational.
You're supposed to walk away saying, I want to become stronger.
Right.
At whatever it is I do, I want to, you know, study harder, or I want to be a stronger person, or whatever.
Right. But at the end of the day, life is not like this.
Yeah, if you're like me, you turn that inward and you're like, I must watch more anime. I must become a stronger otaku.
Right.
That's not good. But actually makes you a weaker person.
Makes you do things like start podcasts and become very pale.
Yeah.
And shun the outside.
The sun hurts.
I know.
The Daystar burns.
But Aaron's comment...
That was Matt Pison's awesome joke.
Yeah, that's pretty funny.
Somebody who spent a lot of time around nerds.
I guess Aaron's comment is very apropos, that the true shonen warrior in life has probably ruined his pitching arm by the age of 17. And that's no way to be, friends. It's no way to be. Hero protagonist, maybe he's the biggest badass, but that only makes Snow Crash a little lamer.
Yeah, it's kind of a crappy book.
That's it.
Okay.
I'm done.
Not going to discuss Snow Crash.
No.
Because I have a lot to say about it.
So do I, but they should go out and read it.
Yeah.
And then we can discuss it later, after they've all read it.
Go out and read a book I hate, and so we can all complain about it.
Right, but before that, read Neuromancer, a book I love.
Yeah.
And then read Snow Crash, which is a book I don't like at all. But
okay.
they're both about the same things. Only one is awesome, and the other
sucks.
One is poor.
It's true.
I don't want any hate mail from you people saying that Neal Stephenson still rocks.
Watch Paul from Hawaii write to us and be like, Snow Crash is awesome and
Neuromancer
sucks.
Snow Crash is so much better than Neuromancer. Look, we don't want to hear that, all right? Neal Stephenson, he's written some good books.
I'm just saying. What else do you have to say?
No hate mail.
No, something else.
Oh, something else. Well, now we go on to...
What was the other thing you wanted to talk about?
I said it.
Okay.
I did it. It's done. It's over.
Okay, so we'll just move. We'll play... Allison sent us an MP3 file of her talking about her time at Anime Boston, which is one of the sound files that didn't come out at all when I recorded it at the con. But she has her story of my life in fandom. Monkey news.
Ooh, chimpanzee, that monkey news, you...
This is a segment I like to call My Life in Fandom.
Where are the Cheetos?
They're right next to you.
For a variety of reasons, Anime Boston was completely insane this year. So I decided I was going to get a table, and that alone, you know, pretty crazy. But you see, this year I decided, alright, I'm going to sell buttons. This is what I usually do. So all I was going to have was buttons and prints. This is going to be really straightforward, really simple, great. And I figured, hey, you know, like, I don't really have time to make all these buttons before I go to the con, so I'll bring the button machine with me, I'll make a few hundred of them on Thursday night, no problem, I'll be done for a whole weekend's worth of buttons in one night, right? Wrong. You see, although I made several hundred buttons on Thursday night, they had almost completely sold out, or at least the really popular ones had, by midway through Friday, and so thus began this insane cycle of button making and selling that pretty much took over the entire weekend. I mean, at first, it was really cool. Like, yay, I made buttons that people like. I'd made a whole bunch of sets just for the con. I'd made ones for Kenshin and Ouran High School Host Club, Fullmetal Alchemist. And I'm like, oh, you know, these are pretty popular series. Maybe somebody will buy my buttons. This will be really great. Oh my god, I had absolutely no idea what I was getting into. The Ouran High School Host Club button sold out almost instantaneously, and then I started losing FMA characters left and right. I mean, on one hand, I'm like, this is awesome. I'm doing really well. This is totally great. I'm raking in 50 cents at a time. Huge amounts of, well, moderate amounts of dough. On the other hand, I was starting to panic because it was, gosh, Friday afternoon, and I'm already running out of merchandise for a 3-day con. That's a big problem. So I did what any rational person would do. I went home and... Thank God that I'd made a whole bunch of extra printouts and started making buttons in the middle of the day on Friday. This was a cycle that continued for the rest of the weekend. But see, that alone would have been enough insanity. Like, that alone would have been, okay, great, I'm going to be making buttons all weekend. That's okay, kind of crazy, but not so bad. I mean, we were staying at my mom's apartment, which was right across the street from the Christian Science Center, for those who have been to Boston. So that's, you know, like a 10-minute walk from the con, not so bad. I go home for a while, make some buttons, you know, eat something out of my mom's fridge, go back to the con. This is totally, you know, manageable, I can deal with this. But you see, that wasn't the only thing going on that weekend. Not only was I going to Anime Boston, but I'd been invited at the last minute to my college roommate's wedding. Now, I had not seen her or the groom, who were both pretty good friends of mine in school, for 3 years since they'd moved to Los Angeles. And so there was no way I was going to miss their wedding. If you've been out of touch with somebody, what better opportunity to get back in touch than matrimony, right? Right, except that, you see, I live in New York City. I don't really drive. We'd rented a car to go to Boston that weekend, but I hadn't driven it at all. My fabulous boyfriend, Scott Price, had driven it. He's used to driving. He lived in Boston much more recently than I did. I've lived in New York City for, oh, I don't know, 7.5 years. I've, you know, driven maybe 5 or 6 times total in the last 3 years. So suddenly I was faced with this thing where I had to get up to North Andover, which is, you know, about half an hour, 45-minute drive north of Boston, in a rental car, in a dress, with heels. This is going to be an interesting adventure. You know, I'm like, okay, how can I make this as unchaotic as possible? I thought, all right, I'll leave from the con, go back to my mom's apartment, get changed at a leisurely pace, put on some comfortable shoes for the drive, drive up, go to the wedding. It's going to be fine. It's going to be cool. I can handle this. You know, I'd stay partway through the reception and go back to the con. Great? Great. Except it didn't work that way at all. What happened is midway through Saturday, we ran out of buttons again, and a giant panic attack suddenly took over because I realized that I was going to be leaving the con for, oh, I don't know, 6 to 8 hours in the middle of the busiest day, and I was almost out of merchandise. Went back to my mom's apartment very quickly. I grabbed the button machine and the printouts and the button cutter and all that crap, and I dragged it to the con with me, and I set up shop behind the table, and I started making buttons at the table and handing them to my fabulous boyfriend as he sold them to people. Literally, at one point, I was handing him, like, a Winry button, and he sold it to somebody immediately. And this went on for, you know, like, an hour and a half, until finally I couldn't wait any longer. I had to go to this wedding, so I leave Scott behind the table, taught him how to make buttons, and I'm like, have fun! Went back to my mom's apartment, frantically got dressed because I'd waited too long and barely had enough time, and the result, put my contacts in the wrong eyes. And I'll tell you, man, when you have 2 different prescriptions, that goes really badly. Only at first I thought, oh, I don't know, maybe I'm really tired, so my vision is blurry. So I put on my cowboy boots, you know, run out of my mom's apartment, run up to the garage, get in the car, realize, in fact, that when I blink one eye and then the other eye, that one eye has, like, super eagle vision and the other one can hardly see anything at all. So I'm sitting in the car, looking in the rearview mirror. I don't have time to go back to the apartment. I'm taking my contacts out, switching them back into the other eye. I don't have any fluid. This is, like, the most ghetto-ass contact change I've ever had. Start the car, take out my Google Maps instructions. So what if I haven't driven in 6 months? It's gonna be awesome. Drive up to Andover. Fabulous. Park, you know, 10-minute walk away from the church because the roads are all tiny. Yeah, that's great. Almost getting run over by a car getting to the church. That's fine. You know, only 20 minutes late, right? Thankfully, the bride limo had apparently forgotten to pick her up, so didn't miss the ceremony. But nobody cares about weddings. Yeah, so the wedding was fine. The wedding was great. I'm sitting at the reception and thinking, all right, I gotta wait for the toasts. When the toasts are over, I can get out of here. So I'm sitting there in my dress, contacts bothering me because I manhandled them in the car, you know, making conversation with all my college friends. Great. Wait for the toast. Toasts are over. You know, 7 o'clock. And, you know, see, I only had the luxury of, you know, maybe deciding I don't feel like going back to the con, stay for the reception. No, because, you see, there's only one set of keys to get back into my mom's apartment. And I think there were, let me see, 7 people staying at the apartment at that time, and I was the only one who had keys. I go back to my mom's apartment, get changed back into my con clothes, go back to the convention center with keys, and, of course, the con by that point, mostly over for the evening. Scott had apparently been huddled behind the table all day making buttons. At that point, it was 9:30. I'd left the con at 3. I'd been gone for 6 hours. And that's why Anime Boston was completely, totally insane. Just the buttons would have been fine. Just the wedding would have been fine. Both buttons plus wedding equaled total insanity. So my advice to you is that if you have a button machine, leave it at home. You want to have that kind of temptation, because that's a long and scary road that you're going to go down the minute the button machine comes to the convention. And for this time, that's my life in fandom.
That's my edit point.
Ooh, cheeky freak of the week.
So, okay. Now it's time for Oh My God, Why Haven't You Seen It Yet?
OMFG.
OMFG. It's really short. Ready? Why haven't you seen Porco Rosso yet?
Go see it.
What is wrong with you? No, buy it. Just buy the DVD. Look, it's in probably the top 5 best Miyazaki movies of all time. It's a Ghibli film. You're looking at me funny?
I'm not looking at you funny.
Can we talk
Ghibli.
About Ghibli?
Yeah, we can talk
top
about
5
whatever
Ghibli movies?
You want to talk about it.
Top
I'm just
5
saying,
Ghibli movies?
This time we have checked, and it is on DVD.
Yeah, I bought it already.
Right.
It came out like last year.
Right,
so,
I know.
So if we're going to go top 5 Miyazaki films. Number one, Castle in the Sky. No, number one.
What?
Number one, Totoro. Totoro. Number two is Castle in the Sky.
Anyone says otherwise, we'll be tickled.
Okay, number two, Castle in the Sky. Number three, either, I don't know, Castle Cagliostro?
I say Castle Cagliostro is actually number two. I think Nausicaä is probably number three.
Nausicaä, I have a hard time being like, is it number three or number four? And then Castle Cagliostro, like, those are kind of flip-flop.
Right, but these are all titles that people have seen. And if you haven't seen those two.
You need to. You need to see all.
Seriously, what are you doing?
The point of this segment. Oh, great, Carmen.
We can wait.
All right.
Thanks.
The point of the segment is you should have seen all of Miyazaki's films, including the non-Ghibli ones. You should have seen them all. And the fact that I haven't seen Ponpoko is killing me every
what?
Day.
What? You haven't seen Ponpoko? It's really not worth your time until you've seen all the others.
Right. You should also watch On Your Mark, which is a music video, and I'm sure you can download it somewhere so you don't have to buy the $100 Hong Kong Ghibli bootleg collection, which for many years was the only way you could see most of Miyazaki's films. And still, we're waiting for a North American release of Only Yesterday, but I think it's slated to come out pretty soon. They showed it on that retrospective on AMC or something like that.
They actually showed it
on TV. There was no dub, but they did show it. Whispers of the Heart is coming out pretty soon, although they released The Cat Returns before it, even though it's a later spinoff, which is weird. But that's not Miyazaki. Anyway.
But this segment is about Porco Rosso.
Is awesome.
Also known as the Red Pig.
I didn't give it much of a chance the first time I saw it because I watched it on a 7-inch TV in a crowded dorm room. And it was a fan sub, and sometimes the subtitles were not great, and it was kind of hard to read them on such a small television in such a crowded room. So I walked away from the film with a couple of questions like, how did he turn into a pig, and is he still a pig? Because if you haven't seen the movie, which you should have, Porco Rosso is a human who ended up having a pig snout and kind of becoming a pig when he was a flying ace during World War I.
Right. We won't say how.
And we won't say if he's cured of his condition at the end.
Because then why would you see it?
Then why would
because
you watch
you
it?
Because you see it. You should see it.
But of Miyazaki's films, it's unique in that there is really no environmental message. In everything else besides Castle Cagliostro, there's always something about, like, the environment and humans ruining it, or maybe can't we live in peace and with each other and also with nature, or some bullshit nonsense about this happening. Like, Nausicaä takes place thousands of years after Earth has been nuked the hell out of, and Earth is so polluted that nothing can survive. In Princess Mononoke, it's, like, just more on the surface of the text, where the gorillas are just standing there talking to you, telling you, if you just stop mining, or can you cut that out? You're killing
seriously.
The forest spirits. I'm serious.
Knock it off.
You're killing the forest
Don't
spirits.
Don't do it.
Porco Rosso doesn't have any of that. In Porco Rosso, of all of Miyazaki's movies, flight is, like, symbolic of love.
Mm.
That it's, like, a visual depiction of love.
It comes up a lot.
And it comes up in many of his films. There's just wonderful flying sequences, but in Porco Rosso, there are the most of them put together. And I also really, like, I watched it again for this, like, only the second time, maybe last year. And we watched the dub because we were watching it with a little kid. And the conflict at the end, I like how the stakes get raised, like in any movie. But in the end, it's like these two guys duking it out while the girl's sitting in a chair, and they're in about 3 feet of water.
One of the finest rivalries of all time. One of the best aerial fights, which
they start off
they don't
dog
pull
fighting.
Any punches.
But they start dogfighting by the end.
Then they're
their
just
planes
fighting.
Are crashed,
they're
and
just
they're
slugging it out.
Slugging through the mud,
really
and
excellent.
Hitting each other, and they're losing teeth.
It's the way every
it's
fight
really
should
gross.
End.
But it's very visceral when it gets to that point where you feel the punches, and it's not. But it's still funny, because there are these funny... Are there air pirates in that?
There certainly are.
Tons.
The air pirate, and it's got air pirates.
There are air pirates in Castle in the Sky, too.
How many other movies, like...
Only...
Some of us remember Tailspin,
Tailspin
right?
was just ripping off Porco Rosso.
Don Carnage, right?
He's
giant, not an air pirate.
Giant Porco Rosso ripoff.
Porco Rosso air pirates, those are air
those
pirates.
Those are, like...
So.
When I watched Tailspin when I was a kid, I was like, this seems like it should be a really good show, and it's like there's something missing. And when I saw Porco Rosso, I saw what was missing. It was that Disney could only rip off so much.
Yeah, and the awesomeness.
They came up with a ridiculous, you know, show, and they used their little Jungle Book characters, but they couldn't capture what Miyazaki captures in Porco Rosso. And you need it in your DVD collection. No ifs, ands, or buts.
It's true. There's no reason why you shouldn't have it.
You could buy it, you know,
it doesn't matter if you're in 5th grade or 50th grade.
It's fine for kids. Like, I think the 4-year-old we watched it with couldn't really follow it the whole way through.
Frankly, I have trouble following
it. She got some enjoyment out of it.
At points, but...
It's good stuff.
Yeah.
You can't have not seen Porco Rosso.
Well, you can, but then you have to see it.
Right, then you have to watch it.
So, now that we have extolled all this, let me attach a little coda onto the end here about Miyazaki and his environmentalism. I think across the board, Miyazaki is lionized. He's a national treasure. Japan considers him to be... He himself is a cultural artifact, a work of art. And I wouldn't take anything away from him. However, he was interviewed last year as part of the Howl's Moving Castle publicity in the New York Times, where he basically came out and said, I wish humanity were wiped off the face of the earth.
He's like, I'd like to see what plants take over.
I'd like to see the grass come back and humanity be relegated to a tiny, tiny portion of the world. Not unlike Future Boy Conan, which was his in the 60s or whatever.
Yeah.
Was that like the 1960-something?
Yeah, maybe 70s. Early 70s.
Something like that. All right, the point is, Miyazaki, if you're listening, not cool.
He's not listening.
That is not... You don't know.
His English isn't that good.
Maybe he's got a translator. Miyazaki, this is not cool. You've got to knock this off right now. Because for someone who infuses his movies with so much love and so much humanity...
Wait, remember Fern Gully? Go ahead.
Why you gotta do that?
I just wanted everyone to remember Fern Gully for just a moment.
Raining on my parade.
I'm
bringing
saying,
me down.
Look how bad environmentalism can get, Fern Gully.
That's not... Look, I kick hippies just like the next guy, right? Uh-huh. That's not my point here. My point is that I don't understand how, on the one hand, Miyazaki really grasps the beauty of humanity. We hear how stupid and awful the human race is, and we see so much, particularly now, if you live in the States, there's war and war footage, and wherever you go, it's not just depressing, it's pessimistic. People everywhere seem to think that we are an awful species, and perhaps the universe really would be better off if we didn't exist. I say it's bunk. I say that's ridiculous.
Yeah, because when you watch a really good movie like Miyazaki's, you can see, you know, the highest point of art and the beauty in humanity.
I say
there's a certain amount of irony there.
Love is like flight, and we'll go into space.
All you need is love.
All you need is space.
Space.
Things are getting so much better now than they've been before.
Fire truck.
We have services, like the fire department. We didn't have that in the Middle Ages. You know how many people burned down?
Or even in
charred to a crisp?
Gangs of New York. The fire department was not the same then.
No, that's true. It was horrendously corrupt, like it is now.
Only slightly corrupt.
Moderately corrupt. My point here is how Miyazaki, on the one hand, can have such an uplifting message in every one of his movies. Every single one, without exception. Even Future Boy Conan, which is really heavy stuff.
I still haven't watched all
Conan
that.
Perseveres. Maybe. You don't know. He could die. I'm not going to tell you. No. He's fine.
He's fine.
So how is it that this guy, who is so tenacious... Would say, maybe he was just having a bad day, whatever, I don't know.
No, he says it in more than one interview.
But
there's
how
also,
can he...
Well, there's also things like, all of his films have children protagonists, or, you know, nearly children, and it's clear that, like, those characters are very dear to Miyazaki. These are real people, and, you know, children all over the world love these kids. And how does Miyazaki treat his own kids? Like, in one interview...
Being absent.
Yeah, he's just not there. In one interview with his sons, they said that they would wake up in the middle of the night and peek into his bedroom to see that he really existed, because they would never see him. He would come home to sleep for a few hours and leave very early in the morning. So, although he gave birth to wonderful daughters on the screen, his two sons barely know him at all.
And Japan might be right. Miyazaki's life itself might be a work of art. But it might be
a tragedy. Goro Miyazaki is doing the new Earthsea movie. So,
but he's doing this.
But think about it. He's like a shonen hero if he lives up to Miyazaki without Miyazaki's help. Because right. Miyazaki, they have this kind of back and forth that the press is trying to get them to take digs at each other. And they're kind of to the point where they had to be like, cut it out, guys, in the press. You don't have to stage this cat fight between us. Seriously, it's interfering with our lives. But, so he has a father who doesn't know who's the greatest animated filmmaker ever. And now he has to try on his own to also make really great animated films.
That's very good.
Maybe the whole
I hadn't considered that.
I didn't think about it until just now. Maybe the whole country is just like that.
I think the resolution of this is not going to be an uplifting one, whether or not Earthsea is a great film. I see Miyazaki's son taking on this project and going into this line of work, not necessarily out of a deep-seated love, but because he desperately wants to know his father.
Oh yeah, because he ran the museum. It's sort of like he studied his father from this distance. Like, he's very close, and the closest one person can be outside of Miyazaki's wife, but he just can't get close to his father, so he has to just study his works and run a museum about him.
And that's
the kind of thing that you do.
A tragedy.
It is. It's the kind of thing you do when people are dead. You can't know them, so you can run. You can find out what they're like from what they left behind. But yeah, pretty sad.
So, as much as you can take away from Miyazaki's movies, I think that there is also something you can take away from his life.
Yeah, yeah. There's a contradiction between the man and his films. Is that it?
Yeah, I think so.
Where there might be, so it's coming up where it's almost Otakon already, and chances are...
Oh, holy crap, that's right.
I know. It's
we're going to be at Otakon.
Yeah, we're going to be at Otakon at a certain Artist Alley table, which if you log into their forums, you can look at the map. Maybe I'll post the map on my site, and so you can kind of find our table more easily. But chances are I won't be there a lot of time. I'll be running around, cosplaying, doing stuff, hanging with other podcasters and the like. So,
and whatnot.
So you'll probably come by the table like 14 times, and one of my friends will be there, like watching the shirts, and you'll be like, "When's Aaron and Noah coming back?" And they'll be like, "I don't know." And then like you'll keep stopping by and keep missing us.
Yeah, more likely it's going to be me stuck there like I was at Anime Boston, while Aaron goes gallivanting
through
the con.
Yeah, every time I leave the table, sales go up. Every time I left, we sold some shirts. I sold three shirts the whole time. But when I left the table,
they see me and they're like, "Oh man, sure. I'm glad I'm not that guy."
I guess we'll be running our filler arc support group, like Anime Boston, where people don't necessarily buy our shirts, but they come by and they're like, "Oh god, the filler arc is so terrible." And we like stand there, and we hold their hands, and we're like, "I know, I'm sorry.
I know, man.
We're all hitting this together. We'll get through it. Even if Naruto's canceled, I don't know if we will get through it." No, some say it will never end.
Internet rumors say 225 now?
No,
episode 225?
I can't believe that. Most of the prevailing attitude on the internet is that the filler arcs are not going to end. That there is no end in sight.
Oh, God.
I know. So, I don't really see a point in continuing watching Naruto until we hear news otherwise. A lot of people have moved on to their shows. Including, like, Anime Pulse, which hung on desperately for many episodes.
So did we!
You could hear them, like, Bato gave up on it, and Ichigo was like, he's still reviewing each episode. He's like, "I'm still going, now that I don't even want to talk about it." Ichigo's like, "Just don't talk to me about it."
Yeah, well, that's kind of how I feel about it. I'm just...
Oh, so we might not have a show for a while, is the point of this story.
What?
Well, I've got to finish up all my cosplay stuff. I've got to make little buttons to sell. I've got to, like, edit this show and get it online before we go to the con. So I'm not going to have time for a show the week of the con because we're leaving on Thursday afternoon to go there. And I'll be, like, packing all weekend and stuff like that. And no. So
okay.
Probably, like, the week after the con, we'll be lucky to get out a show of, like, the early stuff we recorded at the con.
Mm.
I guess we'll take some stuff, but for God's sake, like, not the mix more. Also, I won't make the mistakes that I made at Anime Boston, and I'll get better quality audio. Or I'll just have people call the voicemail.
Call the voicemail.
That seems to work. Oh, I have the voicemail from our... Oh, I was going to record that separate thing. All right, anyway. That's it. So no show for a little while.
But we'll be back.
We'll see you at Otakon.
We're on the Oda bus. If you're also on the Oda bus,
if you're on the
we'll
bus.
Be riding the bus together.
On the bus.
On the bus.